So, in the interest of time, and we're okay for time, right on the dot, let's open the hearing. I need to read this little script if I may. This is a public hearing of the Multnomah County Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission for the purpose of discussing the 2014-15 approved budget for the City of Portland. One of the TSEC's responsibilities, as detailed in state law, is to review the budgets of all municipal corporations under the commission's jurisdiction. TSEC staff have carefully reviewed the budget and worked with the city staff on technical aspects of the budget. We have questions concerning the financial policies implicit in the budget that we'd like to have answered that a typical citizen might ask. In that sense, we're here today representing all of those citizens that might not be able to be here to ask questions of you directly. Of course, we encourage citizens to attend these public hearings and learn more about the city's budget and make any comments that are appropriate. Minutes of this hearing, this public hearing, will be prepared and retained as a permanent record of the proceedings. And there is or should be a sign-up sheet. Is that what I see at the end of the
yes,
table?
Yes, both ends.
If there is any public comment, please sign up for that. I don't see any, but there may be some later. So I'm Terry McCall, the chair, and I always ask the commissioners to introduce themselves and declare if they have any conflicts of interest, either real or perceived. I have none. Would you please introduce yourself?
I'm David Barringer. I have no conflict.
Brendan Watkins, no conflicts of interest.
Gulgan Mercereau, I'm an attorney who works at a law firm that represents the city.
And staff, please.
I'm Craig Gibbons. I'm the executive director of TSCC.
Tony Betchart, staff, TSCC.
Charlie Hales, mayor of the city of Portland.
Amanda Fritz, Portland City Council.
Steve Novick, Portland City Council.
Andrew Scott, City Budget Director.
Josh Harwood, City Economist.
Jerry Vann, Assistant Budget Director.
And are there any others here that should be introduced?
Our budget office staff is here in force to back Andrew up, and here's our auditor.
Excellent. So, hello. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
Thank you. So, with that, then, Mayor, do you have any opening remarks that you'd like to make regarding the budget or a brief overview?
Just briefly, your questions are good ones, and we'll go into those in depth. In general, our condition is considerably different than it was when last we met. We went from a very significant negative position in our budget last year to a modest improvement above current service level this year, and then we were also able, as you know, to invest some short-term upside money last fall. The council's been trying to invest in clearly defined priorities and in paying down debt and other prudent responses to an improved financial situation, and we are happy that that is our opportunity. We're trying to make the most of it.
Excellent. Yeah, that's very, very good news to see that. Excellent. So with that, then, we can go ahead into our questions, and opening with those questions would be Commissioner Mesereau, please.
The April 5-year general fund financial forecast projected a 3.5% average annual increase in discretionary revenue for the general fund over the next 5 years. What are the major factors that could impact that forecast, and how does this budget protect against those risks?
We're going to actually have the city economist take that one.
Forecast my best.
Yeah, I think we're sort of in one of those in the upswing of the cycle of the revenue cycle, and so on the revenue side, I don't think there are too many risks, especially in the near term. I say that hoping not to anger the economic gods, but I think in particular, you know, we have some risk on the upside on the revenue side, at least in the near term. I'm not delusional enough to think that fourth and fifth years out that we can know that very well, and B, that will be a very long expansion should we get there. So the out years have more risks, certainly on the revenue side. I think generally, though, the risks reside on the expense side. We have a couple of outstanding issues related to Superfund mitigation and our building next door, and what to do about that will could drive some significant costs within that 5-year window that we, A, don't know how much they're going to be, and B, haven't accounted for as of yet. But we know they're out there, and so that's sort of how we're going to address it. Structurally, we still have the same issues we've had for a long time, and those are related to pension costs and health benefit premium increases. And so to that extent, what we do in our forecast, we balance over all 5 years of the forecast, making sure we have ongoing resources to cover them. We have anticipated increases for pension costs and health benefits as part of the forecast. So our exposure there is only to the extent that we've under or overestimated increases that we've built in already. So.
Great, thank you. If the December 2014 forecast indicates that there will be a budget surplus next year, does the council have a process for allocating or reserving that surplus?
So I will take this one. So we do use, you know, as Josh talked about our forecast and our risk, we use that December planning forecast to shape our following year's budget process. And so to the extent we were to show a surplus in this coming December, council would have an opportunity at that point to put into place, a process that would effectively use the surplus essentially for the highest priority services, also ensuring that our general fund reserve is fully funded and that our general fund contingency has adequate resources to deal with any unforeseen emergencies. And so again, as we go through our process, that's what we use that forecast for. I mean, just to sort of reiterate things the mayor talked about, you know, over the last 18 months, we did have a one-time surplus at the end of this last fiscal year, and again, a sort of modest surplus going into this adopted budget as well. And City Council has used that to reduce city debt, or at least to set aside funding to pay down the city debt, which actually frees up some ongoing resources for other programs. They've invested in essential capital projects such as a West Side Emergency Operations Center, and then also invested some ongoing resources into some other key city services. And so I think we're going to continue that process moving forward. The second part of the question was, you know, sort of developing a policy to counteract the boom to bust cycle. And, I think that really careful financial planning can mitigate the downside risks of any forecast and smooth the negative effects of an economic downturn or recession. I would say, though, that I think there's no way to fully counteract sort of the business cycle. And there's been a lot of research coming out of the Great Recession, and GFOA is doing a lot of research into how cities did use reserves to the extent they did. And of course, the city of Portland did not use our reserve, and whether the use of those reserves actually helped or in the long run harmed sort of the city. Again, reserves are really great in emergencies when you have a flood or a hurricane. They can be good in economic downturns if they're short, but they're really not effective in long economic downturns, which is, of course, what we saw and what we often see during recessions. So I think from the city's perspective, we have a lot of strong policies around this, and I think it's important for us to continue to do the long-range forecasting that we do, to continue to do the five-year balancing that we do, which includes a lot of frequent updates and opportunities for budget adjustments throughout the year. And I think that allows us as a city to be resilient and bounce back when those economic shocks do impact us. And they will, again. We just don't know when.
Thank you. The total reserve in the general fund is about 15%. What is the council's policy on fund balance, and does this reserve level meet that policy?
So this will be my last one I'll take. Our current financial policy, so we have a general fund reserve at 10%. It's actually budgeted in a separate general fund, general reserve fund. And that's 10% of general fund revenues, less a couple of things such as short-term borrowing receipts, inter-fund revenues, and grant revenues. So going into this next year, the total general fund reserve is budgeted at $62.9 million. That includes a little over $8 million, again, to pay off this existing debt, which is something council did this last year. $7.6 million for replacement of fire apparatus. Again, that was something that council's been setting aside to make sure that we have adequate funding for that going forward. And then $47.3 million to cover that 10% of general reserve. And again, our general fund revenues this next year are going to be about $450 million, so we're exceeding that 10% a little bit going into this next year. And again, that's our general reserve fund. We also have an ending balance, which is, you know, when you talk about sort of the total getting up to about $71.6 million, that ending balance, which fluctuates more, but that contributes to it as well.
Thank you.
Commissioner Barron.
Okay. So with long-term sustainability comes the need for investment. And this budget launches three investment priorities: your emergency preparedness, your homelessness and hunger, and your complete neighborhoods. How much additional money is being invested in this effort, and how will the outcomes be measured?
First, this budget includes $2.15 million tagged as investments in complete neighborhoods, $2.25 million for homelessness and hunger, and $1.27 million for emergency preparedness. Those were new and unique investments in addition to the obviously ongoing programmatic investments that we make in our bureau budgets that fit those categories as well. We have some some sample indicators among the key performance indicators that the budget office has been preparing that will allow us to measure our progress, you know, the percentage of residents who have a week of emergency supplies. Perhaps the percentage of single-family homes that are anchored to their foundation, something that Commissioner Novick emphasized. The percentage of neighborhoods with a sidewalk on at least one side of the street or access within a reasonable walking distance to a neighborhood park. The number of people placed into housing or the decrease in the number of people that are experiencing homelessness or who are newly homeless. There are some good indices of our progress in each of these. I think it's fair to say that we would regard each of those expenditures as a small down payment on big complex issues in each case. There's a lot that we need to invest in emergency preparedness. There's a lot that we need to invest in complete neighborhoods. In fact, the council is deliberating now on a street fee mechanism that would allow us to start getting closer to being current in maintaining our city streets. You can't have a complete neighborhood without a street and a sidewalk, and obviously that's one of the areas that we need to invest a great deal more in. And we know we're not doing enough in terms of homelessness or affordable housing with the set aside of urban renewal funds or with general funds that we program for those purposes. So in each of these cases, those were down payments, and we're going to have to not only continue those budget priorities over time and measure how we're doing with the investment of general fund dollars, but also look for new sources as well.
Thank you. The city budget document does not include longitudinal performance measures. If the performance measures for the new investments prove valuable, could this effort become a model for a system of citywide performance measures?
Yeah, in a word, yes. And that's, again, why the budget office has been developing these indicators and why we're, you know, trying to create them in more and more sectors of our work and test drive them to make sure that we're measuring the right things or that we get good data. So this is, you know, a trend in municipal budgeting. It's a good one, and I think it's a trend, not a fad. It's something that any organization ought to do, and Andrew and his team have been assiduous about coming up with these ideas and getting the council to look at suggestions for how to measure progress, and we've been adopting them as we go along.
Thank you. During our Multnomah County budget hearing, former Chair Madrigal expressed pride in the work that she and you, Mayor Hales, have done this year in realigning the city and the county responsibilities for certain social services. Mayor Hales, would you please provide your perspective on this effort and the resulting impact on service delivery to the citizens?
Well, first of all, Chair Madrigal deserves to take pride in that, and she did a really good job of working with me and with the city in trying to sort out some of these issues. She was really willing to roll up her sleeves and work on this. What we tried to do is figure out who's the reasonable and appropriate lead agency for this function. Maybe in the past we patched together some arrangement by which we paid for this 50-50, but does that actually make sense? Would it make sense to a layperson? So some of what we got sorted out was simply that definitional stuff of really who's in the mental health business? Oh, you are. You should fund the crisis assessment and treatment center. Who's in the business of public order and policing? Oh, we are. So maybe we should pay for the Hooper Detox Center because it's dealing with folks that are in a, you know, alcohol or drug influenced condition and need to get off the streets and get to treatment. So, you know, we tried to just use a common sense razor to cut between who does what, and then also get to rough justice in terms of each the budgetary impact of that on both of us. It was also a conscious decision on our part to not try to take on the full magnitude of all of the ways in which city and county government overlap or intersect, but to pick some of these discrete areas like mental health, the Hooper Detox Center, a few things that we could do and demonstrate that it's possible to start sorting this out. And I think it was, you know, I'm proud of it as well, and I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to continue.
Oh, so this is an ongoing effort with you.
I intend for it to be, and in fact plan to meet tomorrow, actually, with Chair Kefouri and take up that question of, okay, we're still some time away from the budget. which ones would we want to take on next? And I would hope, again, that we don't try to do, you know, the giant city-county consolidation conversation, but let's keep working at this. Where are some other areas? Now, we've also just approved and are starting to implement this new governing structure for housing, which is a consortium effort between the city and the county and Home Forward and other partners. So in that case, we've simply tried to create an umbrella structure under which all the various agencies and decision makers operate, as opposed to actually changing the budgets. But there are other places where we ought to look at changing the budgets, consolidating functions. Some of them are more politically charged than others, like sheriff's patrol and police officers. We deliberately stayed away from that one in the first round. Bridges. Yeah, exactly. Some of them are gnarlier than others. Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You largely answered my follow-up question to that, but anyways, I'm still going to ask it. Are there any other city and county joint projects in the pipeline that you would like to talk about?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, of course, there's a lot of other collaborative work underway. One thing the council funded in this budget that I'm real proud of is an effort that's actually sponsored by the National League of Cities called the Black Male Achievement Initiative, where we try to find ways in which we change the trajectory of young African-American men in the four areas where we've seen shortfalls over time: education, family life, employment, and the criminal justice system. Well, both the city and the county have got skin in that game, and we've both got programs and functions that affect the youth of our community. So there's an area where, you know, I hope that Chair Kefouri wants to dig in some more with us. Again, it doesn't naturally and inevitably lead to a budget change, but there are a lot of places where we are still, you know, the River Patrol fireboat issue is kind of the classic one, where we have boats on the river, they have boats on the river, ours have firefighter paramedics in them, theirs have sheriff's deputies in them. You know, is that really the best possible scenario for how we spend money on patrolling the river? So there are a couple of those that I think are maybe the next, if we keep doing this in tranches, to sort of pick the next tranche of reasonably discrete functions that we can get our arms around, and let's do those this year rather than, again, try to figure out the whole enterprise all at once.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thank you. Moving on, levee accreditation is a growing issue for all properties along the Columbia River. With the engineering evaluation requiring increased funding, the city took the lead on the IGA that will secure the funding. Beyond that loan, is the city involved in other levy activities, and how is the accreditation effort addressed in this budget?
Yeah, I think this is a particularly healthy case of intergovernmental coordination between the drainage districts and the county and the city and metro, and in fact the Oregon Solutions team, you know, that's under the governor's flag. You know, we've all worked well together to sort of accept the mutual responsibility for this problem, to fund the initial work, to communicate with the stakeholders and property owners, because there are a lot of stakeholders and property owners, public and private, that are affected by this. So I'd say, you know, so far so good. I mean, few people know better than you do how many layers of government we've got around here, you know, and few people even remember that we have separate drainage districts and that they actually have this giant responsibility for this expensive asset. So, you know, we've tried to, again, create an environment with the Community Solutions team of collaborative work, and so far so good. You know, hopefully we can bring that same kind of effort to bear on some other things like Superfund.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you. Urban renewal efforts can be a thankless task, regardless of outcome. This year's proposed reduction and reconfiguration of Portland's urban renewal areas seem to have hit that right note, though. Please describe the plan, its financial impact, and what we can expect to see regarding Portland urban renewal in the next 12 months.
Yeah, I would say philosophically the basis of this plan is to focus urban renewal on its original and still valid legislative purpose of taking areas that are blighted and improving them and then bootstrapping the cost of those improvements by using the short-term revenue of the tax increment district and then paying off to the taxpayer at the end of the process. And there has been a lot of skepticism about whether or not we can be disciplined about that and end the life of these districts rather than continuing to extend them, and whether we're going to use, you know, urban renewal for that focused purpose. So part of this was to be true to our taxpayers and our constituents, say, no, we're going to follow the intent of this as well as the law. And then secondly, there are places where changes are appropriate, where we're building a new light rail system to the southeast with new station areas that are currently just outside of an urban renewal area. Well, if there was ever a place where urban renewal might make sense, it would be right around a $1 billion light rail line and a couple of brand new station areas. There are areas like the Pearl District where it's already built out or largely built out, where it's produced a huge amount of value, and where we can put some of that value back on the tax rolls earlier than we would have, and start to again make good on that promise that eventually this pays off for everyone. So the net effect of this package of changes that we're working on, and have partially already implemented, is that we'll put about $1 billion of value back on the tax rolls, and it cash flows about $6 million to the city, the county, and the school fund this year, July 1. So that, you know, I think particularly for Commissioner Novick and me, that's also particularly helpful, in that sometimes you hear people talking about the streetcar as why is the city subsidizing the streetcar? Well, of course, the development that the streetcar supported is going to be subsidizing the city for a very long time, and now it's actually starting to pay off, literally, because all that development, 30% of that development, is now going back on the tax rolls and producing cash flow. So that was the reason for it. And I think that the other opportunity areas that we were looking at are the parts of the education urban renewal area that do actually have upside potential. Well, we can add those to the North McAdam urban renewal area and achieve that objective without having to go ahead and implement yet another URA. And then finally, the other two big changes were the airport urban renewal area can shrink quite a bit and still pay off its bonds. It's not going to initiate any new projects. And the Willamette Industrial Urban Renewal Area, that is a huge one, about 750 acres, was originally intended to support an expansion of Wacker Siltronic that never actually happened. So that one can be terminated because it never actually got off the ground in the first place. So that whole package is, again, intended to make good on what these districts are supposed to be for, leverage the real opportunities that we have for the next 5 or 10 years, and then also start paying off to the taxpayers.
Thank you.
Thank you. I spent most of my career working for large corporations here in town, and span of control was a rather frequent discussion. And the answer to how we would solve that had a lot to do with what the working conditions were and how life changed and how business changed over time. But anyway, relative to that, in March of last year, I see the auditor released an audit on the citywide span of control issues. The recommendations included adding span of control reporting requirements in the budget process, which I see as very tricky work, good work, but tricky work, and conducting a non-represented class and comp study and position and department-specific recommendations that would save money. So are any of those recommendations addressed in the budget?
Yes, they are, and I might want to get both our auditor and Commissioner Novick, who chaired a subcommittee of the council on those subjects, to talk a bit about that, but we are starting to put that into effect. So.
And do we have anything to really add to this?
Maybe Steve can talk about the council subcommittee and the budget process.
Right.
Because
that's the important next step.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, what the committee found was that there were, and we focused on instances where there was a span of control of 3 to 1 or less, and an HR staff person went through sort of position by position with most of the bureaus on that, and in many cases they acknowledged that it was an issue of they couldn't, that there was somebody like an engineer or somebody with specialized skills that unless they were promoted to a manager, they couldn't pay them enough to keep them. And that was the only way they could do it, although recognizing that it set up, I mean, it didn't necessarily make a heck of a lot of sense. So our HR folks said that It's been years since we've done a classification and compensation study since around 2000. And they recommended, I mean, there were some changes that were made immediately where the bureaus agreed, okay, this is something that we need to do something about. But in a lot of cases, the conclusion was that rather than tell people that they needed to be demoted and have their pay cut when we hadn't had an analysis of classification and compensation in so many years, it was more humane and more logical to say that we are going to do a class comp study and after that return to the span of control issues. So that's what we're doing for over this next year. The money's been set aside to do it. Meanwhile, the police bureau, it's not quite the same thing because all of their managers are represented. So class comp study isn't as relevant. But the police bureau is going to do a staffing study. And in the course of that staffing study, we'll address some of the same issues. So both of those efforts are underway this next year. So we'll have an opportunity to revisit the span of control issues in the context of those efforts.
Thank you. And then the economist mentioned a few minutes ago a little bit about the Portland building. So does the budget include funds to continue with the analysis of the future of the building?
Well, in a word, yes. I mean, we are finding the funds to continue the analysis. But we also are fortunate in that we have Fred Miller as our Director of Office of Management and Finance and one of the most experienced public administrators around, and he has brought together a group of industry professionals to look over our shoulder and say, do we have other options in addition to the fairly unsavory ones that we know we have already? The short answer to the question of what's the future of the Portland building is we don't know yet.
Sure.
But we're trying to vet all the options, all the reasonable options, but it's a difficult situation. It's also going to have financial impact, so we're conscious of that we're going to need to be able to shoulder the cost of whatever we do there, whether it's renovation or replacement of that building. It's a big one. It was a big unplanned expense that we know now is looming for us. So we're trying to get our arms around, again, what are the responsible options here? Are there some that are more cost-effective than the ones that we've already considered? So that work is underway. I think the combination, what we will find, the combination of professional consulting services that we need to acquire and volunteer advice that we might ask for to advise us on what those options are.
Yeah, it's not an enviable position to be in, to building a relative youth in the condition.
Exactly.
And certainly having Fred at the helm on that.
We sleep better on a number of counts having Fred around, but this is a tough one, even for somebody that's been through those kinds of issues a time or two.
He's up to it. He needs to earn his pay.
Yeah, that's right. He volunteered to come out of retirement after all.
Darn right. Be careful what you wish for. Now, a question that we had not originally sent, but I believe that we've communicated it to the budget office in the last week or so, has to do with the increase in stormwater fees relative to the Port of Portland's situation. And so we had their budget hearing last week and heard some discussion on it. I thought it would be sort of interesting to hear your comments on
that. Commissioner Fish is not here, but I think we do have BES staff or budget office staff who prepare openers, prepared to talk about that.
Yeah, and you are?
I'm Jim Hagerman, Business Services Manager for Environmental Services. The rate increase that the port's referring to is not really an increase in stormwater costs so much as it is a phase-in of stormwater charges in the drainage districts where the port, as I'm sure you know, has a very large presence. These are charges that residents and businesses around the city have been paying all along, and we're phasing the districts in. And that came about because prior to 2000, we had kind of a patchwork of incidents of charges out in the districts. Many were paying the same rates as people elsewhere in the city. Others were not paying anything because in response to ballot measure 5, back in 1990, the Bureau had granted an administrative exemption to businesses that were discharging directly into the slough or to the rivers. without going through city-owned or maintained facilities. So it's the so-called riparian exemption. At that time, we did not have a stormwater discount program to recognize their work in controlling their on-site discharges. So with that in mind, with the best of intentions, we embarked on an intergovernmental agreement with the districts under which we would recognize the work they do in support of city goals on stormwater, and then they would recognize that there were certain city common costs that everyone should share. And we began with a fairly low payment from the districts to the city, and our intent was to escalate to something we called parity, which would have involved quite a bit of money coming to the city and an amount going to the districts. When it came time to renegotiate the agreement about 5 years in, we realized that we couldn't get to an agreement on what parity was. And the district said they defaulted to letting the agreement run out with an inflation factor for the remaining 5 years. We informed them that our intent then was to begin charging retail stormwater rates in the districts, and we proceeded along that course. In September 2012, then council voted to resume billing directly in the districts with a 4-year phase-in, so 25% as of July 1, 2013, phasing up to 100%. But I might add 100% of the discounted stormwater rate. So only those common costs, what we call the off-site charge, which relates in large part to general environmental work and drainage of public rights of way. The other part of that was an intergovernment agreement with the districts that would explicitly recognize their work in support of city stormwater goals and would compensate them accordingly. And we recently concluded that agreement. Council approved it, and it's intended to be retroactive to July 1 of 2013 when the billing started, and we'll proceed forward along those lines.
So aside from negotiations and discussions between you and the port, there's a third party involved, the Federal Aviation Administration, which I understand has some concerns as to whether their constituents are benefiting from this. Do you have an opinion on
right.
that?
Well, we've been having a very robust discussion with
I can imagine.
Topic. Yeah. And yeah, they're maintaining that it's an illegal revenue diversion. Mm-hmm. The city's point of view is that the airlines are not even customers of the city. The port is the customer right. of the city. And the port may choose to pass along what costs it wishes to pass along. So far, I think the discussions with the port have been very good. Clearly, there's some resolution we need to reach, and we're not there yet. But we think the case is pretty solid.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Sure. So that concludes the formal questions. I know we have a question or two in addition that came up that are not real stumpers. So not to worry. No short questions here.
Do our best.
Just based on current news and the headlines and things like that, and you recently just passed, pursuing the Google agreement, and I was just wondering what impact that would have on your budget, either positive or negative.
Well, Andrew can maybe reflect on that a little bit too, but we think it will have some positive impact, but it's an estimate only because we don't know how much new business versus diverted business will result from their decision to go ahead and provide gigabit fiber across the city. Obviously, that's an upgrade from the service level that a lot of people have. So depending on the competitive position between them and their competitors, some people may be willing to pay more than they used to for internet access. So we think there's new revenue involved. We're just not sure exactly how much. I think maybe Andrew or Josh have already done a forecast of how much we think we're going to do.
Not a formal forecast, but yeah. You've actually covered some of the challenges of that in terms of whether it's people moving over or not, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, you did cover really well. I mean, there's a lot of things going on there. There's whether or not people are simply moving from Comcast to Google because it's cheaper, in which case the city loses money. or they're paying a little bit more, or they're getting fiber than they didn't have anything before because it's a better product. You also have just sort of, so you've got all these, and then you've got general competition in the market, so does that suppress prices slightly? So there's a lot going on, and because of the way Google's rolling out their coverage, they're going to go in the areas where they have the most business already. Those will generally, I mean, and it's borne itself out in Kansas City, that will generally be more affluent areas where they are likely to already have service. And so it may be one of those things that over the long haul we may see revenue, in the short term we may not. And so, but we haven't integrated anything into our forecast. I don't think we will, quite honestly, given how long the time frame is for their build out and all those other things.
I have to admit, I sort of had to scratch my head a little bit over at the idea of all this. It's very good, but my question to myself is, well, when is fast enough, and mine's pretty fast, but on the other hand, my son, who lives 2 miles from me, has terribly slow service, and so he would say, slow enough is not good enough.
Yeah, I think the other part of this, that again, very difficult to forecast, but one of the reasons why we're enthusiastic about it is that, you know, this is in a sense building a highway from Portland to the rest of the world. From a business and overall economic competitiveness standpoint, it can't help but be good. So exactly how that translates into business activity and higher business income taxes from our business side of the tax base, we don't know, but we think it's all good. It's all upside. That if our local businesses have got faster speeds and better connectivity, then they're going to flourish, and we're going to attract more software developers, and so on and so on. So, forecasting, that's an even bigger challenge.
So you could take a hit at franchise fees.
Yeah, we might take a small hit.
Absolutely. Yeah. What I was going to say too is we look at. I'm charged with looking at it through a budget lens, but generally speaking, this is a great thing. And I think reasonably it can be a relatively nominal impact, sort of either way, on the terms of our utility license fees, especially over the long haul. But absolutely. I mean, from a just sort of a general conditions and opportunities, I think it's absolutely worth doing.
Sure. And the anecdotals from other communities supports your point.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Help Kansas City.
Right.
A lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, David, you have a second question.
Yeah, it's just a small one. You're investing a lot in new LED streetlights, and we've just seen from other municipalities that you get quite a bit of savings from your electric bill on that. And we're just wondering if you factored that into your budget as well.
Yeah, actually, and the savings are being used to pay for the LED lights.
Oh, okay.
So there's a plan in place within Transportation Bureau to essentially, you know, sort of, you know, use those future savings to help pay off the conversion. It will eventually result in savings, but it's quite a ways down the road. I don't remember the exact.
I can't remember exactly the date either, but yeah.
Jonas, anything to contribute?
It's about 15 to 20 years when the long-term financing starts to pay itself off, that it actually starts to be in debt gain to the city.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there some other questions? I do have a small trivia question.
really
nothing to do with the budget, but as we were walking in, we were admiring the garden out in front, and someone asked, where does the food go from the garden? And I said, I imagine that people just help themselves to it, but listen, we'll ask somebody else. If we don't need an answer particularly.
I met one of the women who was volunteering to tend it, but I'm not sure where the food actually goes.
Well, I could imagine that there are probably resourceful people that find a way to do harvesting in the evening, but it's a really...
I think it goes to how much is
I'm sure it goes to a good use, even if people who need it are finding it. Well, they're on the way to it.
Yeah. Piece of the trivia that I know, of course, is that used to be a parking lot.
Yeah.
And when I was first on the city council, we made the decision to walk our talk and get rid of the dedicated parking spaces for city commissioners and the mayor and make it into a garden. And I'm glad we did it.
It's a nice touch. It's a very nice touch. Mayor, compliments to you and the commissioners, and of course to the budget staff and others who are here for the good work, as well as today's conversation. I need to gavel the hearing closed, but don't go away. We need to open a regular meeting and then take our action. So now I'm opening a regular meeting of the TSCC. Is there any discussion amongst the commissioners on the information that was just discussed? Okay, there being none, then does the staff have comments?
We do not have any comments other than that the budget was well prepared, followed budget law, and we have no recommendations and no objections.
You know, that's I don't recall what the record is, but that's an excellent accomplishment, because it doesn't matter how good you are when you're dealing with a large budget, it's easy to have something slip through the cracks procedurally. And it does happen, and we're not overly critical when it does happen, because I think we understand it. But I also think it speaks really well when it doesn't happen, particularly in large, complex organizations that have as many moving parts as yours does. So it certainly compliments all around there. So with that, then, I've entertained a motion from the commission relative to certification.
I move to pass the, or approve the budget as presented.
Okay, to certify.
Or certify the budget, yes.
And is there a second?
Second.
If so, it's been moved and seconded. I'm not going to repeat the motion. Any objections or discussion first? No objections? Those in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, opposed? So very good. That carries. And with that, we are adjourned, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
I forgot to ask the public comment, but I believe there was none.
No, there was. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Do you still issue a paper annual report, or is it all online now?
No, we do issue a paper annual report.
You do? What about I used to get one every year. I must have updated my address at some point.
It should be on Kindle.
We'll make sure you do.